Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. Killer bees are also known as Africanized bees. And we all know there's nothing Africanized about these two guys. It's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
That's Cap. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. So, Chandler Rome, I love Chandler Rome's reporting. Chandler Rome does a fantastic job reporting for the Astros, for the Athletic. He pinned an article today talking about, here's the headline, Astros lost three of their biggest leaders. Who will step up in their absence? Joe Espada has quotes that say, look, if once the one leader leaves the room, another one does. I always find these articles very interesting because the last time we had this was Carlos Correa and the mound visits. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do without the mound visits? Carlos Correa, his best quality is the ability to visit the mound. Look what he did with Fromber and Yandy Diaz. When Yandy Diaz is staring at him, Fromber had to be calmed down by Carlos Correa's mound presence. Like it's, and people were all off season. Well, who's going to step up and be the leader now that Correa's gone? Who's going to fill the big shoes of the captain, Carlos Correa? They went and won a World Series. Like, it was never an issue. They didn't bat an eye. Never a problem. And I'm not poo-pooing on leadership because I do think leadership matters and I do think it's important. I just don't think it's an issue when it comes to the Houston Astros. But Rome brings up the idea. Michael Brantley, who was a leader when he was around, which wasn't much, he retired. Hector Neris was like a leader of the bullpen, especially with like the Spanish speakers. He's now a Chicago Cub. He'll be completely useless by September. And then Martin Maldonado. And the catcher position's, of course, always one that you have leadership. You're handling a pitching staff. You are visiting the mound unless Carlos Correa's around. So, like, who's going to step up in their absence? Who's going to be the leader? And I have zero fear at all when it comes to the Houston Astros that they're going to lack leadership, even under a first-year manager. Look, I don't think Jose Altuve is like the loudest voice in the room. He might be the loudest. He just doesn't talk the most. Jose Altuve can get you right, and he's proven to do that in the past. Same thing with Justin Verlander. Verlander might be a little bit of a diva and have some diva tendencies, but when Justin Verlander needs to speak, Justin Verlander speaks. I know that we mock Lance McCullers and bury me in the H, and that burying him in the H came way too soon, but he has the ability to speak up and to have a loud voice in the room, as does Alex Bregman. Yep. So this whole, like, oh, the Astros are, like, we've already done this once when Carlos Correa left, and all the Astros did was win the World Series without the presence of Carlos Correa on the mound. I have zero concern about the Astros having any sort of leadership issues.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And you named just about everybody. The one guy I would throw in just from the standpoint of experience is Abreu, simply because of the fact that, you know, he's been in the game a long time, played at a high level. Obviously, his first year in Houston, he wasn't going to say a lot, and he had his own struggles. But Abreu's the kind of guy in a locker room that people are going to turn to, they're going to look to, and they're going to respect. But you're right. Because of all these guys that have been through this golden era and the guys that are still around, those are the guys that you have 100% faith in that they are going to. They know how to handle things with class. They know how to handle things the right way. I didn't know Neris was supposedly a leader. I know that he was very effective, and he was also highly emotional. But I do know that from the standpoint of over and over again, Altuve does not want to be an outward visible leader. But when there's a time and a place for it, he's going to make sure that his voice is heard and he's going to do what needs to be done. I'm with you. I have zero concern about leadership with this team because there's a great veteran presence in this locker room. I would love that as part of this and as this golden era continues, I would love to see Yordan maybe take on more of it, even if it's from the Altuve direction of it. He doesn't have to be screaming, yelling, chest pumping kind of guy, but he's a guy that's one of your best players. And he's a guy that's going to be here. He's a guy that I would love to see kind of get groomed along the way and take on a little bit of that, a little bit more leadership as well, because that's a guy that's going to be counted on going forward, regardless of who's here and who's not after this year.
Yeah. See, I'm not the type of person that needs my best player to be a leader, though. Like, if they do it, that's great. Like, that's cool. But if they don't, like, whatever, as long as somebody else does. And also, like, is baseball that sport where you have to have the dude that grabs you by the shirt, like, hey, let's go? Like, no, not really. King of Twitch, like, I do think that there's something that exists from a catcher. Like, if I had to pick one thing, it's like, okay, well, Yiner has to be able to step up in his ability to be able to handle a pitching staff. But you also have help. Like, you have pitching coaches. You have people around you that should be supporting him along the ride as well. Is he going to be Martin Maldonado next year? Absolutely not. Absolutely he's not going to be Martin Maldonado in this, like, the attribute of handling a pitching staff. He as long as he's taking steps forward, though, and you have the help of two pitching coaches, Miller and Murphy, you have the rest of the pitching staff that whenever, you know, they're on an off day or they're not throwing that day, they're helpful on that front. So it can come from so many different areas.
No, it can. But, like, to your point on the best player, I don't need the best player to be like an outward leader, but he's got to be handling his business the right way, because whether he likes it or not, the rest of the team, especially younger guys, are going to be looking to him, looking to see how he handles things, looking to see, you know, the fact that he's leading by example with the way he's playing. But you don't want him to be an ass clown like some of the guys that are superstars, quote unquote, in this league that just, you know, go off the rails or get thrown out at the wrong time or do stupid stuff on or off the field. And that goes into it as well, and I think.
Yeah, you don't think he's that guy.
No, I don't think.
Nothing he does is that guy.
No, but there's plenty of examples of guys that are that guy, though, that you don't want them to be, and that kind of constitutes to me a leadership quality as well. Because when times are tough or he's been through some situations, there are going to be guys that lean on him, and he doesn't have to. Like I said, he doesn't have to go and make an example of himself, but he has to be a leader within the culture of that clubhouse. And that's why I think overall it's just as easy to sum up as saying the culture they've built in that locker room is so strong that I don't think any player that's on this roster that have been here for any period of time is going to allow that to kind of get out of hand or get away from them.
King of all Twitches, leadership is overrated when you're millionaires playing a game. I do think that leadership can be overrated. I think it's like I'd rather have it than not have it. Don't get me wrong. But am I picking leadership over a guy who can hit 320 with 30 homers and driving 120 runs? Never. Like, not once. Never. And I think that you can find leadership from your highly paid players. Martin Maldonado has proven that. Martin Maldonado was one of your leaders, and he was one of your worst offensive players. 713-780-3776. 4958, you have Altuve and Verlander in leadership positions, enough said. Those guys are respected. Like, and, you know, Verlander, I don't think is, you know, he's not going to speak up a lot. And I do think that Verlander has some diva tendencies, which is fine. He's earned it. Like, you brought up Jose Altuve. He's not really one that wants to talk a ton, which I agree with. But he's not scared of it, though.
Right.
Like, it's one thing to not want to do it all the time, and it's another thing to not want to do it, but then also be hesitant and timid about it because you don't want confrontation or you're not comfortable with confrontation. He's not that guy. Like, he's proven it on the field that he's willing to say something if it crosses the line with him.
I think for me, too, like, when you look at the Astros leadership equation, it's got to be some of the younger guys have to step up here because it is going to be their team here very, very soon. Jeremy Peña, like, Yiner, Chaz McCormick even. Like, the young guys have to kind of fill that void because it's great if Bregman, if this is important to the locker room or the clubhouse and two people out there, it's great if Bregman does it for a season, but we all know he's leaving. Like, Yordan Alvarez probably can't be your best leader. He doesn't play when it's too smoky outside. Like, yeah. I don't know if that can be your
but
number
that's why
one
you can't
leader
throw Tucker in there either because you don't know how long he's going to be here.
Yeah, like, I'm not
but
really.
What if they just, but what if they have average leadership? Now they're not going to be a good baseball team?
Well, that's
ludicrous.
Who's going to give the speech in the World Series? Jeremy Michael Brantley's gone.
That's why you have managers to motivate players, and that's why you have coaches to motivate players. Like, the whole, oh my goodness, they're great, they're led, he's the best leader in the league. Cool. What does that give you? What does that get you? You need talent. You need players that have success. Like, you need to produce. Locker room speeches are overrated. The Astros had 100 locker room speeches last year and fell one game shy of the World Series. They lost Carlos Correa, then won the World Series. Why do we still put value in, like, oh my goodness, they lost this unbelievable leader? Somebody's going to step up. It's the nature of the business.
It is, but Jeremy, what I'm saying is the way I view some of this leadership is like you mentioned with Maldonado, but it could be in so many different ways, whether it's, you know, on an off day or talking philosophy with pitchers like Verlander sharing, because you're right, he is and can be kind of an aloof guy, sticks to himself, diva, if you want to call it that. But at the same time, you're looking for guys that can kind of take the guys, the younger players that Joe's talking about, you need to get some leadership qualities. Well, you got to learn it first. And on the field is the stuff that matters the most. What are you thinking in situations like this? Like, they could lean on Brantley to understand, hey, pitchers in this situation, or lefty or righty, or doing this, or in his experiences. Whether you're leading outwardly or trying to be a leader of men or not, I get it. How it relates to baseball is up for its subjective. But when you can lead by kind of developing the young talent both on the field and setting them up for situations, so that when the situation arises, it's not too big for them and not everybody standing around going, what do we do now?
So which of these young players in the Astros are you fearful of having a situation that it's too big for them? Jeremy Peña has been the World Series MVP. Yordan Alvarez has hit the biggest home run in postseason history for the Houston Astros. Maybe like a Hunter Brown, maybe like a Yiner Diaz.
I think
like
Yiner,
young
for
players
sure.
On these, I mean, yeah, Yiner perhaps, but I mean, the other young players on this team have achieved. They've succeeded at the highest level.
But you got a first-year manager, too, so that's going to factor in, too, no matter. We just got done talking about when coaches take over for the first time, and bumps are in the road are going to happen, mistakes are going to be made. But Yiner's the first guy that I would look to, not only because he's got big shoes defensively with Maldi, but also because offensively he struggled in the playoffs, and there's things that you can help him to kind of move his progression along a bit. So you're right. It's a different team than most teams in baseball because their young guys are already experienced and they've already gotten their feet wet. But there are still, there are still some players that you got more to do with. If you're going to, completely rely on Jake Meyers could use a couple of shoulders to lean on and try and figure some stuff out, too.
Could he, though, or could he use 30 points with the batting average?
But it's not just 30 points with the batting average. It's understanding situations, maybe in how you attack a baseball in certain situations, or
give me that situation.
I'm saying later, it could be a late game playoff game or something like that, or knowing something about a certain field you're playing in or doing things like that, where you could have a veteran that says, hey, man, another thing besides just taking fungos off the wall tonight, be aware of this, or in this situation, do that, to where it is different because they are so far along in advance than most teams in baseball. But I still think there's always going to be a need for some kind of leadership, depending on how you define it with any team.
Yeah, I don't think, I think it has some weight, but I think it is very, very small, and I think it is highly, highly overrated. You can point back to Correa. Now here, let me ask it this way. Let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, the 10 being the highest leadership attribute you can have, 1 being the worst. Would you rather Yiner Diaz have a 7 leadership points and hit 250 with 15 homers? Or would you rather Yiner be a 4 leader and hit 320 with 35 homers?
No, I understand. The obvious answer is to take
well,
the 4
leader. Well, that's what I'm nitpicking. I'm not saying that leadership is a 0. I'm saying that we overrate leadership. Like, all the things you're saying are accurate. Like, it's factual.
But it's also that it's not
the importance of leadership, and I think that the importance of leadership is highly overrated.
But that, and I understand that. But my thing is that thank God we're not relying, if it is Yiner at a 4, but doing what he's doing offensively, that he's not the only guy that's going to be leaned on to be a leader, because that's where it's leadership by committee. Like, you've got enough veterans that we named off that, depending on the situation, are going to be able to do a lot of the things that Maldi did by the mound visits. I can see Bregman going out. And others trying to calm down a pitcher. I could see Abreu doing that. But I could also see, guys, depending on the situation, Yordan's been in every big moment from an offensive perspective that he can say, hey, I faced this guy before, been in this situation before. Think about this or keep an eye on that. So I think it's okay to say that you could do leadership by committee too, but I still think that there's a place for leadership in all professional sports, even in baseball.
No one's arguing that. No one's arguing that there isn't a place for leadership. We're talking about the importance of the leadership, and I'm not worried about the leadership being an issue for the Astros. 0-4-2-3, let's not forget we no longer have Dusty. That will make up for as many wins as the best leader ever would. I take some sarcasm there.
Mm-hmm.
I read some sarcasm there. I think that I'm right, but I'm not 100% sure. 9780, the key here is maintaining the culture. The Astros have established an incredible culture. They always will be the villain in every town that they go. They are never, ever fazed by it. They know how to be clutch when the game is on the line, and they know how to attack other teams' weaknesses. The Astros of the early 2000s never had that. They must maintain this. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, I'll take the culture over the leadership, because I think the culture instills leadership when other players have to. Like, when a Correa leaves, somebody steps up. When a Maldi leaves, somebody's going to step up. And the reason reason why? Because the culture has been established to form and develop those leaders.
Think about what Hader said in his press conference, too. I wanted to be a part of that because I knew what that clubhouse was all about. Not just on the field and trying to win games, but how they had each other's back, how they cared about one another, and I wanted to be a part of that. That says something about the long-standing, whatever you want to call it. It starts with calling it the culture, but just the overall ability for them to kind of handle their business in the clubhouse and on the field that a lot of players see from afar and go, that's something that's been lacking with a lot of good baseball teams over the years and a lot of teams, period, in general, that you if you don't have it, you know you don't have it. And if you have it, you know you don't have to worry about a whole hell of a lot more.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It is mock draft season. How do we make the Texans get better? How are they closer to being a Super Bowl team next year? Well, we get them closer with our mock drafts. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Welcome back to the Killer Bees Nuts, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and that Jeremy Branham guy.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 7212. Team chemistry matters way more than leadership. You can have a team that gels well and morale is high without a leader, and they'll go further than a team with a great leader that has terrible chemistry. I would agree, and I think a lot of the things that you were describing, Blankers, like, hey, how do you play this off a wall here? What do you look for in a 2-2 pitch against a lefty here? I think that's more chemistry than leadership, because like you said, that can come from all over. That's like, do you have a team that's talking to each other, helping each other out? Because like one specific leader, like if he's a pitcher, well, he's not going to have those conversations with you. So I agree with the team chemistry matters more than leadership that this texter said. Now, I will say, kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth here a little bit, I think they do work hand in hand, because I think that good led teams have the better chemistry.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, I think that we've heard stories in the past about sometimes, and I want to say at a certain point, JV wasn't exactly outwardly and openly trying to help. It might have been when Hunter Brown first came up that they didn't have many conversations. And
prior
then,
to them meeting. Like, once they met, though, like, everything that I've read, JV was very helpful to Brown.
Yeah, I don't want to just, like I said, I don't want to misquote anything. So, but I know that there's been times when, like, you get a young, impressionable player that's coming up that would love to get the advice of a veteran and would love to get kind of the tips that they got along the way. And from a football perspective, it's like Favre did that to Rodgers, where he shut him out, didn't want to help him at all. Roethlisberger did it in Pittsburgh. And that's the last thing you want. You want, instead of that me culture, you want the kind of guys that are going to be like, hey, at some point, no matter what I've achieved in my career, this team this year, I might need that kid to do something for me or be what Pena was a couple years ago so that we can achieve our goals as a team. So it's in my best interest to help these guys out. So that's the kind of things, you're right. You can tag it a bunch of different ways for how you call it. But like I said, when you don't have it, you know, and when you have it, it can go a long way.
Let's make the Texans better. Yep. And we make the Texans better by drafting for the Texans, our mock draft season. This mock draft today comes from Josh Edwards of CBS Sports. I do like to take a look at the first few picks, especially now that Joe's back. It was sad to see him be gone all last week. But they have every draft we've been looking at has the Bears taking Caleb Williams at number one. So, Joe, do you think there's any chance they don't take Caleb Williams at number one? Because every one that we've seen is Caleb Williams at number one.
I think there is a 80% chance they take Caleb Williams number one.
Okay. Are they trading fields?
Yes. I think that there is still an outside shot that, you know, once upon a time they went to a steak dinner and were so impressed with the way Mitchell Trubisky interacted with the staff at the steak dinner that they took him over Deshaun Watson. So I won't rule out anything with this organization. But that, unlike, I know, and King of Twitch brought this up, people are trying to suggest, like, fields for Dak. I doubt it. I know. This Cowboys website is suggesting fields for Dak.
I told you the one that I saw.
Yeah,
it's going to be a pick. It's going to be for picks. There aren't going to be players.
The one rumor I saw was that it might be a package, but the package was centered.
Was it someone speculating?
Someone, I forget if it was ESPN or someone said that the scenario was the Bears, Atlanta would be a taker for Fields, and it would be a package around picks and Kyle Pitts.
Oh, okay. So it'd be kind of like the DJ Moore trade.
Right, yeah. Right.
Okay. I think I'm 80% sure it's Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be quarterback for quarterback, like something like that.
Right, no.
I could see a flyer player like that, like a Moore type. I could see that. So Williams to Chicago. Yeah, Jaden Williams. Jaden Daniels. We're seeing more and more often Jaden Daniels going number two, which I hope not. I have a bet riding on that. Number three, Drake May goes to New England. Marvin Harrison seems like a lock right now at four. Brock Bowers, the tight end of Georgia, going number five. The Malik Nabers, six to the Giants. Joe Alt, seven to Tennessee. Dallas Turner, eight to Atlanta. Jared Verse, I've kind of seen him up and down. He goes number nine to Chicago. Congratulations. And then Olalumawa Fashuna, say it with conviction.
Well, you did.
He goes to Penn State, or he goes from Penn State to New York, the Jets at number 10. Gives some offensive line help for Rodgers. Scroll on down. Quarterbacks, J.J. McCarthy, 13 to the Raiders. And that is it before we get to the Texans at number 23. So, CBS Sports, their mock draft, they have the Houston Texans selecting Chop Robinson again. So, another opportunity for us to talk about Chop Robinson. The two picks after that, Graham Barton goes to Dallas from Duke. We're going to see a lot of tackles here because it looks like they're going to need tackle. And at number 25 to Green Bay, they have Kool-Aid McKinstry. So, we've been playing the you can put your feet in Nick Caserio's shoes. You have the option of those three guys, 23, 24, 25, the guys that were taken there. Chop Robinson, Graham Barton, Kool-Aid McKinstry. I think we can erase Graham Barton from this list. So we're looking at a Chop Robinson, edge from Penn State, Kool-Aid McKinstry, corner from Alabama.
Yeah, and this, again, relies solely, I think, on what you're doing with the guys that are currently in those positions that are free agents, Stevie Nelson and Grenard. You know how important it's going to be to have another guy on the other edge opposite of Will Anderson, and if it's not going to be Jonathan Grenard, then if this is the way that you choose to go about it, then you go and look at getting a young rookie defensive pass rusher that can be the other bookend to Will Anderson Jr. And if you look at the fact that you know that there's a chance that Stevie Nelson's going to leave, then you look at Kool-Aid McKinstry. Of the two, I'm going with Chop Robinson because we heard D'Amico at the end of the year. We know how much he is adamant about improving the defensive line and how important it is to whatever they're going to do. And we just talked about watching these conference championship games and understanding how important the defense is. So if Grenard is gone, it's even more Chop Robinson. But even with Grenard, there's a case to be made that you need to have injuries happen, rotations are going to happen, and you need a guy that can come in and do the same kind of things, whether Grenard's hurt, whether Grenard's taken a series off, or the fact, and you're rotating guys, or you just need a guy to be dominant for the long run alongside Will Anderson. So I'm going to stick with Chop Robinson.
If John Grenard is brought back and Steven Nelson is not, I'm drafting Kool-Aid McKinstry at pick number 23. If Steven Nelson is back and John Grenard is gone, I'm drafting Chop Robinson at number 23. If they're both back, I'll go Chop Robinson at number 23. Mm-hmm. If they're both gone, man, that's a tough one.
See, I think if they're both gone, they're going to look long and hard at free agency for a defensive pass rusher.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that they would also try to sign a corner, too. Think you're probably right. I think you can get a better defensive end in free agency than you can a corner, too. So because of that, I'll go Kool-Aid McKinstry. If they're both gone, I'll go the corner because you talked me into it. Joe, where are you at on this one?
I'm taking Kool-Aid straight up.
No matter what?
No matter what scenario.
Okay, so okay, so you bring back Steven Nelson. You don't bring back John Grenard. You're still drafting Kool-Aid McKinstry.
And the reason for that is because I think Nick Caserio, I know it's just a waiver wire pickup, but you know, with Derek Barnett, Jerry Hughes, guys, like Nick Caserio's brought in players pretty consistently through veteran deals, cheap deals, waiver wire pickups that kind of shows he can identify pass rushers for the cheap. So I'm going to go off the fact that I think Will Anderson's going to be a 10-sack guy and Nick Caserio can find someone else. And to me, Kool-Aid looks like a way bigger improvement over Steven Nelson than I think Chop Robinson would be over where else you can find guys. And I like Chop Robinson a lot, but also, can I really pass on a guy named Kool-Aid? Yeah. I don't know. But I think Nick Caserio does a better job evaluating defensive pass rushers and defensive linemen than he does cornerbacks, at least through free agency and stuff. So I'm going Kool-Aid.
Okay. I mean,
you can also, I don't know if you were with us last week, Joe, whenever I gave you I don't want to pay Grenard. I want to bring back J.J. Watt. So that's where I'm at.
I was there for that.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you were there for that.
I was. I don't want to do that.
I mean,
but
Stevie
like,
Nelson, though, he evaluated Watt. Stevie Nelson. He yeah. brought him in. Stevie Nelson hasn't been bad at all.
He hasn't, but I think as soon as you pay him anything more than what you've paid him now, he's an overpaid contract. Like, I think he's perfectly suited to where he is right now. I think he's a good player, not a great player. And plus, if you lock down your corner spots, like your pass rush is just going to look better because they're going to have less time.
I don't get me wrong. I don't think they're going to bring him back, and I don't think they should, because I think for what he wants, and he's obviously looking to get top dollar the way he tried to negotiate even with his social media posts and taking shots at Nick when he didn't get the contract initially, he's going for his bag again. And I think you can find veteran corners on the market that not even that veteran, I mean, but have years under their belt experience and just get another version of Stevie Nelson, maybe a younger version of Stevie Nelson. I think you can find those. That pass rusher, though, is going to be hyper important, especially the way D'Amico wants to coach defense.
Yeah.
And that's why I think they would focus that way.
It is interesting because it is the focus more of D'Amico. You're 100% right. Looking at this free agency class, it looks like it's more saturated with good defensive ends, though, than it is corners. Now, you know, maybe there's somebody we haven't really talked about or heard of, and he's a top, you know, he's not a top 100 free agent, but maybe he just hasn't had a chance to play. Maybe he's been behind a couple of good corners, and then Caserio can go find that guy, too. I would agree that Caserio has proven that he can find both of those positions. It just feels like there's more pass rushers in free agency this year than corners. So it makes me nervous to, you know, leave or enter. It makes me nervous to enter the draft without a corner opposite of Stingley. And then, like, do you want a corner opposite of Stingley that's a rookie? Like, I wouldn't mind it, especially if he's talented like Kool-Aid. A texter says that D'Amico likes Alabama players, which, I mean, yeah, I guess that can't be true. He drafted
so does Caserio. He's talked about it.
That's the other thing is, like, well, Caserio drafted Christian Harris before D'Amico was ever even here. Like, is this more of a Caserio thing? Is it more of a D'Amico thing? I know that we look at D'Amico because he went to Alabama, but I also would argue that Caserio looks at the SEC because the SEC is the closest college conference to the NFL, so it's easier to make those evaluations than, like, the WAC, you know? So, and then who's making the draft pick? Is it Caserio? Is it D'Amico? So, like,
Caserio said over and over to your point, Jeremy, he's like, it's the closest thing to the NFL, and he loves SEC, he loves Alabama players. He's talked about that because of how well Saban recruited and the kind of depth they have at Alabama. So, yeah, I mean, he started loving SEC players and Alabama players before D'Amico got there.
Yeah, that's a good point. 8863 doesn't happen much, but I disagree with Blankers. Nelson got picked on during the season. I can't believe it doesn't happen much. That's a compliment, I think, Blankers.
Well, I think it was. I'll take it as such.
I think it's more of a compliment, right?
Yeah. I think that Stevie Nelson, over the totality of his time in Houston, I think he's been an above-average player. I think he's done a really good job. Yeah, there were times this year, but you can say that just about any corner. Sometimes, no matter what, no matter how you play, if you're playing, especially you're in a zone and you're not getting the help, you're going to be – a lot of people are going to sing. They did it to sink Stingley in his first couple years a lot, where they were like, oh, he got beat on that play. But if you don't understand the zone and understand where guys are supposed to be, it can happen. The best of corners are going to get beat. It just happens.
Devin says they should start liking Georgia players more, especially on the defensive side. All right, 713-780-3776. It's time for our Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever your little heart desires. 713-780-3776. Your questions for the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Daisy Dips, because we had the Daisy Dips ready to go this weekend because they are absolutely delicious. And if you're having people over to watch the big games or watch a sporting event or doing whatever, you're entertaining and you want to make sure that what you're putting out there for snacks, hors d'oeuvres, and a meal is good and people like it, you can get a lot of enhancement from Daisy Dips, because they have French onion and they have ranch, and you don't have to make it from scratch and sit there in the kitchen and try and get the right mix like my mom used to do when we were growing up and having the family over or having friends over to watch games. It's all done for you. Just go to your local grocery store, go to the dairy aisle, go find the dips. You're going to find Daisy Dips, the French onion, and the ranch. They're absolutely spectacular. They're delicious. You don't have to do any work. You're going to be a hero with your guests, and they're going to enhance everything. From the wings and the pizza to the chips and the veggies, they're going to make everything taste a little better because they are done by the best, and that's Daisy. Daisy does the dollops of sour cream that you can always use on your baked potato, but now you can get the dips, and you can make everything taste better at your function and gathering. Check them out today at your grocery store. Get you some Daisy Dips.
You've got mail.
It's Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
Something's in the bag.
Mommy?
What's in the bag?
Oh, what's in the box?
Time for our Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. He's Blank on Branham. 713-780-3776. What's your question for the Killer Bees? Key from L.A., who is more important to a team, a starting pitcher or a starting quarterback?
Oh, I think it's without question the most important position in all sports we've talked about is a starting quarterback. Starting quarterback is, bar none, hands down, the most important position in sports.
The only thing that I would push back on is the best player on a basketball team, but I would still lean quarterback for what it's worth. If we were to have the argument, that's what I would say. But I mean, you have five starting pitchers, like at minimum. You can have a really good offense and not need great starting pitching. Look at the Texas Rangers. So yeah, this is quarterback without a question. Key from L.A., I think even asking that question shows your lack of knowledge when it comes to baseball. I'm just kidding you because I love you, and you always give us grief for talking baseball, even though you're from L.A., and that goes to show
he's
you
hoping
that
Ohtani
people in
plays
L.A. don't like baseball. Ha ha. What's quarter, that?
He's hoping Ohtani returns to be a starting pitcher and plays quarterback.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Stafford's getting a little long in the tooth. 1483, will Sweat from Texas be there at 23?
I think he should.
I think that... Go ahead.
I really think he could because we've had him in some of the mock drafts, and I think, look, as much as we're talking about a pass rusher, I think the pass rusher comes in free agency, but I think you improve the interior defensive line that DeMeco wants to do with a guy like Sweat. That's why we've brought him up. I think he'd be great if he was there at 23.
I think it's 100% that he'll be there at 23. Murphy seems to be the better of the two Texas defensive tackles. I like them both, just depending on their value. But, yeah, if the Texans left the draft with either Murphy or Sweat, depending on the round, I wouldn't be upset with that whatsoever. 713-780-3776. What do you think about the 24 hours of Daytona?
I think I'll pass.
Sounds like something Will Ferrell would star in.
Yeah, or a documentary on spring break back in the day.
What do y'all know what it is?
Yeah, it's an auto race. Yeah,
is it like legit? They have different races for 24 straight hours.
It is. You are in a car with your team, but you are driving for a full 24 hours.
And it's just one race.
Yeah. As far as I know, I mean, I could be that's how I've always understood it to be.
It's a 24-hour sports car endurance race held annually that kicks off the new IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship season. I think this is really cool. Is it more than one driver?
I don't think so.
Because that doesn't sound safe. 24 hours driving a car in circles? That sounds like, I mean, that's wrecks galore. That sounds like it's a very dangerous thing.
Caffeine, baby. Couldn't have this at BYU, but you're going to need your caffeine.
They'll have to assume there's more than one driver. If not, this is very dangerous, and I do not condone it. I think it's cool. Like, I'm not a NASCAR guy. Like, I'm sorry. I never will be. But I think it's cool for those that like NASCAR. Like, remember when college basketball used to have the 24-hour opening day?
Yep.
That was awesome.
It was great.
That was really cool. So if I were a NASCAR fan, I would love this. I would love this. But I'm not, so I'm out. Eric the Driver, why does the NFL and MLB have historic celebrated rivalries where the NBA only seems to have flashpoint rivalries?
I think it's depending on your definition of a rivalry, but I think that kind of to your point about quarterback versus best player, now the rivalries are player-driven instead of where it used to be rivalries between teams for years and years that the NBA kind of tries to market itself a little differently too. But I mean, also, NBA guys jump ship all the time. It's tougher to, and all sports is getting that way, but it's not like you used to have the Yankees, Red Sox, or, you know, all these different, you know, Bears, Packers. They try to make it a thing. For the last couple of years, it hasn't been a thing. So it's tougher to say from a tradition standpoint, and with player movement as much, it's harder to have those longstanding rivalries.
I think it has something to do with division rivalries in the regular season. Like, NFL regular season still means something, and you play division opponents twice. So, like, I think that comes into play. Plus, it's a little bit more special because you play less games. So, playing that team consistently twice every year or every year, like, that to me matters. Like, in the regular season matters more than the NFL. And then baseball, you had, like, these long-standing divisional rivals, and you used to have to win your division to get into the championship series. So I think that's why. Whereas NBA, you know, winning your division doesn't really matter. You always had, like, the Celtics-Lakers became a rivalry because they were playing in the finals forever. And then just random teams pop up. You don't really have this long-standing, like, you have some local rivalries, things like that, but that would be my answer anyways. 713-780-3776. What's your favorite deli spot in Houston? I like Mandola's. Go Cougs.
Okay. I'll narrow it down to two. I think Kenny and Ziggy's, because I'm partial to the old school deli sandwiches that are just loaded down. And if it's not Kenny and Ziggy's, it's probably Katz's.
It never closes.
It never does. And there was one by the house when I lived in Midtown, and it was a lifesaver after you know, a night out in the town.
Mandola's Deli is great. They do more Italian than anything. Chicken parm sandwich there is fantastic. So I'll say Mandola's too, even though you can make an argument that it's not very deli-ish. Now, I'm not a huge deli guy. I'm not, like, sandwiches for me. Like, I'll eat them. Like, I'm not going to turn down a good sandwich. But I very rarely go out of my way to have a sandwich. So I'm not a big deli guy. I'm not the guy to ask.
On the road, we loved them. The ones that were just like I said, and you could always guarantee that you're not going to finish the sandwich. There's more that you can even take back to the room. But in L.A. and in New York, the delis, the Stagecoach Deli, and some of the famous delis, ooh, those are pretty good.
Yeah, I trust that they're good. I don't mind when I go. I never really go out of my way. Eric Branham, what golf course does your dad teach at? He's been around the block a time or two. He's currently at Elkins Lake in Huntsville, but he's been at, like, April Sound. He's been at Willow Creek. He's been at Deerwood. He's been at the Kingwood courses, the Advantage course. Yeah, he's been – Club Corp sends you on a roller coaster.
Yeah, Deerwood's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, I worked there. I worked there in high school and college.
That's a great track.
That's my favorite course in town, too. 6856, how important was Trent Dilfer to the Ravens in 2000?
Did he quarterback him? I mean, he was a game manager.
That was key from L.A. That's his counterpoint to why is quarterback more important than starting pitching.
Also, by the way, that the game has changed and evolved even more into a passer's game, so it's different now. But back then, did he screw up or did he manage the game correctly enough to get him a win so that the defense could do their thing? I think he did his job.
It's also like a 1-in-30 example.
Right.
That's key from L.A. Blankers is on to something, too, about how the game has changed so much. But I would say that the... Like, it's a good counterpoint, but I would say their defense was just going to win games, just like a really good offense is going to win games. It doesn't matter who your starting pitching is. Like, the equivalent to the Baltimore Ravens defense would have been, like, the greatest offense of all time. That was just going to outslug every team they played anyways.
That's fair.
8755, am I stupid to say I love sandwiches but not burgers? Yes.
Yes, you are. Yeah, that's just not intelligent.
Cheeseburgers or sandwiches? Cheeseburgers for me.
Cheeseburgers as well.
10 times out of 10.
Are cheeseburger sandwiches?
I would say no. I would say no.
A sandwich?
Can you get a cheeseburger at a deli?
Yeah.
It depends on the deli you go to.
Yeah, it depends, because Katz is for sure sells cheeseburgers.
I think
they're really good.
I think is cheeseburger a sandwich is a way better conversation than is a hot dog sandwich.
I would agree.
What does Google tell us? Is a cheeseburger a sandwich? What is a sandwich? Like, I guess we needed to find.
Yeah, because it can
two pieces of bread.
Bread or
based
a bun,
on their
right?
definitions, it's clear that a burger meets the basic requirements of a sandwich. It has two slices of bread, in this case a bun, with a filling in between.
There you go.
Define sandwich. I really want to argue this. This is a hill that I would die on. A sandwich is an item of food consisting of two pieces of bread with meat, cheese, or any other filling between them. Yeah, I don't think I have an argument.
So then the hot dog doesn't qualify because it's one piece of bread.
Yes.
What happens if you cut it, though?
Well, it's a good question.
Can it be, what happens if you cut it?
Yeah, but you're changing the bread. It doesn't come that way.
I think by definition, a cheeseburger is a sandwich and a hot dog is not.
Agreed.
What about a taco?
No, it's one. That's one piece.
It's not bread.
It's one tortilla.
Oh, a soft taco, yeah.
Now, if your hard shell taco breaks,
well, how
it does
do you
not
think
become...
they make hard tacos, Blankers?
Huh?
How do you think a hard taco comes to exist?
Well, I get it, but actually bread would be more like with the yeast and the different the things that make the bread, instead of a tortilla, whether it's crispy and fried or it's wrapped. This is one we don't need to go down.
Is a hot dog a taco?
That's a good question, too.
Man, let's see what the Google says. Define taco. No, a taco is a Mexican dish consisting of a fried tortilla. That's how it gets hard. Typically folded, filled with various mixtures such as seasoned meats, beans, lettuce, and tomatoes. No, a hot dog is not a taco. No, not even close. It's got to be a Mexican dish.
Fair.
And nothing about a hot dog is a Mexican dish, unless you're cooking discada, in which case it can be. Yeah, I guess a cheeseburger would be a sandwich, though. Man.
Yeah.
You sound so defeated.
Yeah, you do seem like you're disappointed in that.
You were like, it seemed like you're ready to die on this hill, and you just got crushed.
I did. I got owned. I got owned in this argument, and I'm sad because I don't want to say a cheeseburger is a sandwich. But every time somebody asks me what's my favorite sandwich, I'm now going to say a cheeseburger. I despise how two teams in the NFL handled their coaching search. I'll tell you who those two teams were and why I despised it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what it is, but you've lost your hair, you're losing your hair, you've got pattern baldness and thinning spots, you don't think there's anything you can do about it, you really can. It's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that just mask the problem. It's legitimately taking care of the problem once and for all. It's your own hair. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. So Doc takes some of that. He repurposes it. You still have total coverage on the sides and the back, but you get more where you need it most. It makes a substantial difference in your appearance, your coverage area, and your self-confidence, and it's a game changer. You, as the listener to ESPN 97.5, can meet with Doc Linville and his staff and get all the information for absolutely free. It normally costs $150 for a consult. You get it free for listening to us just by going to 975hair.com. Set up an appointment. Go in. Ask questions. Get answers. See if you're the next in line to get the procedure like I did and reap the benefits. It's phenomenal. It's fantastic. It is painless, and you're going to see the true results in 6 to 9 months, but already, as soon as the procedure's done, you will see the follicles, you will see them getting there in place, getting ready to grow, and you are going to be excited about the results that you are going to witness over the next several months. It's a fantastic procedure done by the best in the business. Check them out today and tell them I sent you by, because I cannot say enough good things about Doc and his staff. Go to 975hair.com.
It's time to sit back, relax, and enjoy this next bit of brilliance with Joel and Jeremy. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
All right, there's two teams that I don't like the way that they've handled their coaching search. And if I was a fan of those two teams, I would not be pleased in the direction of their two teams. Although their flagship would probably be talking about how they won their press conference. I'll start with the Atlanta Falcons. I was reading today in The Athletic talking about how they came to land on Raheem Morris, and then their like head of communication CEO guy was tweeting at me saying, you should like Raheem Morris. Here's why. The Atlanta Falcons, first off, Arthur Blank wanted to hire Bill Belichick. So first and foremost, we know right out of the gate, Arthur Blank wanted to hire Bill Belichick. And I'm not saying that was the right decision. I'm not saying that that Bill Belichick should have been the slam dunk. I'm not saying that's who they ultimately should have landed on. In fact, I've said the opposite about Bill Belichick in the coaching carousel, was that, are we sure the game hasn't passed him by? What's the allure for Bill Belichick? Look what he's done the last few years. But it's how they went about it. This was from The Athletic. They said that, my understanding is Blank went into the process wanting to hire Belichick as coach, but those around the owner, fearing what that could mean, it nudged him in different directions. After a while, the amount of change hiring Belichick could require weighed on Blank, especially when taking into consideration that making the amount of change might only get him 2 years of Bill Belichick. How I read this, Blankers, is you had people in the organization that, because they were worried about their own job, convinced the owner to go away who he initially wanted. I don't think that's the way you come up with a head coach. Like, that could have been the best option.
No, I think
option A could have been the very best option that they could have got, but because other people in the Atlanta Falcons business were scared about having Bill Belichick around, they nudged the owner, Arthur Blank, to go in a different direction. This is like Easterby to me.
I was just going to say, is this not Jack Easterby to a T? Because when you think about it, Jeremy, take it a step further, because I saw a lot of those tweets, and I'm going, why did they feel that they had to justify anything to anybody? They just make their choice and then back the guy 100%. But when you think about it, Rich McKay had the guy that was considered to be head of football operations and general manager, whatever his title was, he got bumped out after this. He's a Belichick guy. He's been a guy that's been a Belichick guy. They've worked together in the past. So as part of this, if now the head coach and the GM are now reporting to Arthur Blank directly, and they changed the hierarchy and the structure as well, it's kind of weird that they've had to do all of this kind of extra work to try and justify the coach and the hire that they made. So I think that, yeah, I didn't like the way they handled it either, and I think that part of it, too, is there's a whole lot of CYA for a guy that's been there before that you could easily have sold on the fact that, look, he's a young up-and-coming coach. Getting him back in the building is phenomenal. He knows how we do things. He's got a great defensive mind. He's going to do whatever he's going to do. You could have spun it a lot of different ways, but the fact that you come out of the gates defensive and CYA on all of this is a bad look, and it just seems to be like Arthur Blank kind of relented at the last minute, or just kind of faded out and just said, okay, you guys do it your way. But Jerry Jones wouldn't have done that. And I think Jerry's a guy that's always been focused on big name, old school kind of guys like that. It's crazy how they went about their business.
It felt like it was job preservation for all of the other people. Like, in a way to cover their own tails, they convinced the owner who wanted somebody else to hire someone else. And then that someone else that they hired, you mentioned Raheem Morris, he's 21 and 38 lifetime. Yeah. He's been a head coach for 3 years and then an interim coach for part of a fourth. He has never finished in the top half of a division. He finished fourth in his first year in Tampa. He finished third in his second year in Tampa. Now, they did go 10-6 that year. It was a good division. I do feel the need to say that. And then he got fired after a 4-12 year where they finished last. Took over for Atlanta in 2020, the interim head coach after they moved on from Quinn. And they did some things with him, but they still finished 4-7. Now, taking over a team that already fired their coach, I really don't put that 2020 against him at all. But you end up with a Raheem Morris whenever the owner wanted Bill Belichick, and then how did that process go? And then you had some of the other contenders, like, you know, how do we feel about Bobby Slowick versus how do other people feel about Bobby Slowick? This texter just mentions, I felt like Mike Vrabel would have been the perfect fit in Atlanta, which I would agree with the small exception that Arthur Smith came from the Vrabel tree. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't see Atlanta hiring Vrabel after they moved on from Smith. Keep in mind, they hired Arthur Smith, who was the offensive coordinator under Mike Vrabel before he got hired by Atlanta. The second team that I don't like how they handled their business at all are the New England Patriots. And look, Jerod Mayo might turn out to be an excellent head coach. In fact, I'll be rooting for him because I actually did a deep dive whenever I thought he might be a contender for the head coaching job with the Texans. But does the way the Patriots came about hiring Jerod Mayo and then all of the rest of their coaching decisions, like they just hired their defensive coordinator, which is going to be DeMarcus Covington, who was the defensive line coach for the Patriots. What did I miss? Like, the Patriots have been awful the last 2 years. They've won 12 games in the last two seasons, and they're promoting from within. Like, they should have said, sorry, Jerod Mayo, but Mike Vrabel's out on the market. I like Mike Vrabel a lot, but I'm hoping Jerod Mayo does some good things. Here's where I'm at with the Patriots. This feels very Lovie Smith to me. You won 12 games in 2 years, and you're promoting Jerod Mayo to be head coach. You won 12 games in 2 years, and you're promoting the defensive line coach to be the defensive coordinator. I don't even think they talk to other people. This feels like Lovie Smith with the Houston Texans. The only difference is the Texans had a fake coaching search, where the New England Patriots never had a coaching search.
They had a handshake agreement, and they were loyal to a fault to where they weren't going to go away from that. And they let Bill Belichick in on the process of who was going to be a successor from some of the things that I've read. But you're right. Overall, they're loyal to a fault. And the fact is, I don't think that they were anticipating Vrabel was going to be on the market when he was. But look, I think that the Cowboys had basically a handshake agreement with Dan Quinn that Dan Quinn was going to be the heir apparent to Mike McCarthy. Things change. They paid him in the meantime a higher salary than most coordinators and whatever the title that goes with an associate head coach. But at the same time, they still reserve the right to go in a different direction if there's a better candidate or one they like more that's still out there. So I think that you're right. To the way that the Patriots handled it, at least test the market. Look at where they struggled the most. Whether you move on from your quarterback or not, you know, offense has been a challenge for the last several years with Belichick. At least explore some of these young offensive coordinators and listen to them and see with the interview process what they think you could do with the pieces that they have and what they would do to get pieces that they don't. The fact that they just went basically and said, no, we're sticking to our guns. We said we were going to go with Jerod Mayo. We're going to go with Jerod Mayo. We're not even going to have the process. That's on them, but you're right. They haven't won a whole lot. And look, the Belichick coaching tree has a lot to be desired as well with guys that have come up under Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I wouldn't be happy with the way the Falcons came about being there to their head coach if I was a Falcons fan. And then I'd be really ticked off if I were a Patriots fan. You're selling to me a staff that won 12 games in the last 2 years, and you want me to be happy about it? And you didn't even interview anybody else? Don't like it. 713-780-3776. What is tougher to achieve in sport? Kansas City winning or going to 6 straight AFC championships, or the Astros going to 7 straight AL championship series? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.